So it is Palm Sunday. So both of my readings today are going to be from the Scripture. We're going to read the Palm Sunday reading from Luke this time, as well as a reading about the week that's coming, the Holy Week, the Easter week, and then one of the key events of that week. So let's begin with Palm Sunday reading from Luke chapter 19. And I'm reading verses 29 through 38, and this is from the New Revised Standard Version, the updated edition of that. Hear now these words. When he had come near Bethphage and Bethany, at the place called Mount of Olives, he sent two of the disciples, saying, "Go into the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find there a colt that has never been ridden. Untie it and bring it here. And if anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying it?' just say this: 'The Lord needs it.'" So those who were sent departed and found it as he had told them. And as they were untying the colt, its owners asked them, "Why are you untying the colt?" And they said, "The Lord needs it." Then they brought it to Jesus, and after throwing their cloaks on the colt, they set Jesus on it, and he rode along. And as he rode along, people kept spreading their cloaks on the road. And now, as he was approaching the path down from the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began praising God joyfully with a loud voice from all the deeds and power that they had seen, saying, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest heaven." Then from a few days later in our reading, we're going to jump to Mark's recording of the week. This is from chapter 11, verses 15 through 19, again from the NRSV. Then they came to Jerusalem, and he entered the temple, and began to drive out those who were selling and those who were buying in the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And he would not allow anyone to carry anything through the temple. And when the chief priests and the scribes heard it, they kept looking for a way to kill him, for they were afraid of him.
The political and religious power structure of a wealthy empire, they had their reasons for being threatened by Jesus and his followers. They used hate as a weapon, which many people were more than happy to get on board with. So for everyone who isn't a straight white man in America, especially those of us with a little something to show and maybe a little something to say, we all know a little bit about posing a threat and being hated. And for those who choose to stand up or get on a donkey to call out and confront hate, this is by Jill Scott. Still be mad at me.
Time of silence for reflection. Just be ready for that. And also a reminder to folks online, we'd love to know where you're joining us from. So in the comment section, if you don't mind leaving that, we'd love to say hey to you. My message this morning is titled Easter, Saving God from the Powers That Be. Now, I have often said that we Christians get so caught up in the unbelievable parts of the Bible stories that we miss out on the practical, more contemporarily impactful parts of these stories. And Easter is no exception. As the story is told from most Christian pulpits, from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday, it is an epic tale full of surprise and the miraculous. It is practically otherworldly in how the events go down and the miracles occur. The scene of Judas's betrayal of Jesus, it almost feels like something from Shakespeare. And the resurrection story itself is so incredible that it actually requires modern Christians to place the realities of our scientific age to the side, all for the sake of being true believers. And all the while, practically hidden right there in plain sight, amidst the surprise and the miraculous, is a story that is needed in every age. A lesson that cannot be taught frequently enough. A conviction that far too few are ever willing to carry out to its fullness. A message that is needed today as much as it has ever been needed. The setup for the part of the story that begins on Palm Sunday and leads through Easter is interesting. It's called frequently referred to as a triumphal entry, but you know, I actually think that it's more should be called the humble entry. Because you see, in those days, anyone hearing the tales of Jesus riding into town, bouncing around on a previously unridden donkey as people shout, "Blessed is the King," would find it difficult not to compare that to the entry of the actual ruler of the region who would be coming to town around the exact same time. So Pontius Pilate, his entry would be very different from the entry that we saw of Jesus. As Rome's official authority, he would have paraded through the front of the city gates on a mighty steed, surrounded by Roman soldiers. The contrast is stark between the two, and it is intentional. It is basically the setup for the rest of the Holy Week story. Jesus is positioned over and against the powers that that be. Across the world today, starting today and running through next Sunday on Easter, ministers will tell the tales of what they will label as atonement. More specifically, atonement of sins. Even more specifically, they will claim the Easter story is a journey towards an act of substitutionary atonement where a mighty God's only choice to save all of humanity is to painfully kill his, and I use the male pronoun intentionally, kill his one and only son. You might not be surprised to learn that that is not what you will hear here today. But I will make a little attempt to save the word atonement. As far as I'm concerned, one, any God that's forced to take those extreme actions is no God. And two, even if it were a God, it's certainly not a God worth trying to understand and be spiritually connected with. So we're going to take back the meaning of the word atonement. This today is going to be a story about at-one-ment with God. That is, being one with the God of our understanding, being connected with that God of our understanding. Contrary to the traditional telling of this story that so many people will be told about this week, at-one-ment with God is not done through the work of God. At-one-ment is not a lackadaisical pursuit. Yes, it requires sacrifice, but not on the part of God. It requires it of us. And in that sense, Easter is not a story of God saving us, but rather a story about our call to save God. As we heard, the Holy Week story begins with a clear contrast between Jesus and the powers that be. It's sort of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge from the storyteller, a foreshadowing of what's about to happen. It intentionally places the less than flashy over and against the powerful. Now, the Christian Easter story, as you know, has its roots in Jewish Passover. The annual remembrance of Moses leading the Israelites out of Egypt to escape a repressive, enslaving government. And that's the setting of our Easter story, of our Palm story today. Jerusalem is teeming at that point with an influx of folks coming here to the city for that celebration. And for the religious leaders of that time, this meant an influx of money for the temple, and because of that, for the leaders. Unfortunately, frequently for the powerful, enough is never enough. The religiously powerful saw this as an opportunity to bilk the poorest travelers out of what little they already had by exchanging Roman money for Jewish currency at unacceptable exchange rates, but was very much needed because that was the only currency that would be accepted for buying the animals approved for the religious sacrifices, which the religious leaders also sold at an unreasonably large profit. It was a racket. And like most rackets, it preyed on those who could least afford to be taken advantage of. They were called the least of these. Now, for the Roman authorities, Passover presented a true danger. As I said, Passover commemorated Jesus leading the Israelites out of Egypt to escape a repressive government. Well, the Roman government was a repressive government. It might not surprise you that a repressive, occupying government might not want the people that they are oppressing to get all worked up about the story about how their ancestors escaped from a repressive government. That was certainly true for Rome. For Rome, This meant that they needed to encourage a calm and peaceful observance of Passover. Like far too many ruling regimes for them, this meant bringing in the muscle and bringing in a lot of it. The folks in Jerusalem were being taken advantage of both monetarily and physically. As is almost always the case, the more influence and power a particular person had, the less likely they were to be taken advantage of. And that meant that those suffering the brunt of the occupation were, of course, those who could least afford it. It might not surprise you to know that Jesus did not take too kindly to that reality. If there is one single story about Jesus that seems most out of character in this week-long Easter story, it is probably the story of Jesus flipping over tables in the temple courtyard. What would send this peaceful, equality-seeking teacher of love and compassion into a chaos-causing rage? Over the years, I've read and heard so many attempts to explain his behavior. And in some cases, they're really more like attempts to explain away his behavior. For me, the answer is really much more simple than that. As I mentioned, the Roman muscle had been brought in to keep things calm and peaceful. And one of the most visible places where that muscle would have been seen was atop the wall which surrounded the temple courtyard, where the money exchange and sales of animals for sacrifice happened. Now, keep in mind that religious leaders also happened to be the local political leaders. So Rome had this vested interest in protecting the interests of the local political leaders. So during this time of the year, the courtyard was the very epicenter of that power. It was where they made their money. So, under the watchful eye of Roman guards perched all the way around the surrounding walls, Jesus walks into the heart of their power and money, and through his own one-man protest. And you better believe the citizens had all been warned at one point or another that that kind of behavior would not be tolerated. I have to believe that Jesus had a pretty good idea where his actions would ultimately lead. But he knew, just as Dr. Martin Luther King would say years later, freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. That event would be one of his greatest lessons. This would be his teachings in action. This would show the world how to save God from the powers that be. Jesus rides into Jerusalem to shouts of blessed is the king, making him a threat to the actual king. And then he disrupts the current epicenter of the religious and political powers that be. As I said, I have to believe Jesus had a pretty good idea of where his actions would ultimately lead. I suspect that that was the beginning of the end of Jesus. This is where the powers that be began to recognize him as a viable threat to their power and began to conspire to rid them of this thorn in their side. So these two stories together are a story of not only confronting the powers that be, but they are the beginning of a reality check of how far the powers that be will go to protect their status. It is a story whose conclusion happens on Easter. It's a story that continues to echo in the world today. We can look at the life story of Dr. King and see it. We can even see it in our politics as various groups of folks who are used to being privileged are beginning to lash out as they feel their power slipping away. confronting the powers that be can be dangerous work. And it should not be taken lightly. It can be unsettling and unnerving and downright uncomfortable. The powers that be will not go down gently. They never do. They'll use every tool available to them. And in confronting them, we could be risking our good name, our freedom, or even, as we will see on Easter Sunday, our lives. Yet, we are morally obligated to confront them. We are. Yes, we are called to do so as lovingly as we can, but confront them we must, because they will not relinquish their power gently. The Palm Sunday to Easter story is a not-so-gentle reminder of how much is required to resist powerful and oppressive forces who wish to take away the rights of certain people and to marginalize them to the point of being second-class citizens. I hope you hear the echoes of contemporary U.S. government in that statement. And not only is the Palm Sunday to Easter story a not-so-gentle reminder of how much is required to resist the powerful and oppressive forces, it is also a reminder of how far the powerful powers that be will go to protect their power. Now, the good news is that Easter's conclusion is a reminder that it's also the story of how far love will go for the sake of divine justice. In the end, while the Easter story of confronting those who would use their power to oppress others and the real risk that go along with it, it is also, though, the story of the resurrecting power of love and hope. In his life, Jesus sought to show us what the fullness of love looks like in action. It looks like healing people who are hurt. It looks like feeding people who are hungry. It looks like loving people who are shunned. It looks like defending people who are having their rights taken away. It looks like friends sharing food together. It looks like grieving over the loss of a friend. It looks like helping out the lost seek out meaning. It looks like confronting oppressive systems that seek to outlaw and marginalize people for who they are and who they are. It looks like a man suffering capital punishment because the threat of death from the most powerful government on the face of the planet was not enough to subdue his love for those who were being taken advantage of. The story of Easter is about a moment that erased our sins in some mystical, magical show from above. Rather, Jesus' death showed how far love will go, what love looks like when it's played out to its fullest. And it showed us that if we truly choose to follow, it can save us. Not only that, in saving one another, in standing up to the powers that be, as they use their powers to take advantage of the least of these, we will find ourselves drawing closer together as a society, overcoming divides, and seeing the beauty that resides in each of us. Some might even call that a true reflection of God. That, my friends, is how we say God and the powers of being.
Patti Smith.
Together and accept this prayer or meditation or just breathe in and out. Hear the words that you need at this moment. As people around the world gather to remember and celebrate the week leading up to the story of the death and resurrection of Jesus, may we not forget to honor the life and teachings of Jesus. What he taught us was what he would show us on Easter. That with love there are no endings, that with love hope is never lost. With that thought, with that knowledge, with that reality on our minds and in our spirits, we pause and remember those who do believe that all hope is lost, that they are forgotten, alone, despised, worthless, that there is nothing good for them or so little that there is no joy in life. We lift up those who are abused, bullied, ignored. ignored, alone, sick, grieving, depressed, unhappy, stuck, overwhelmed, dying, crying, lost, seeking, whatever their struggle. May we seek to help bring into their lives the hope and love of Easter. And when it is us who are in need of the new life which Easter reminds us, may we be open to those who are seeking to share that grace and love with us. We give thanks this day for the Easter promise of new life, new beginnings, and new hope. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and your actions bring that love and happiness to all of those you meet.